Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back. And as always, you know, I'm just excited about life in general, but I'm really excited today to have not just an amazing expert, but amazing human being who happens to also be a friend of mine, probably for almost a decade at this point. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so happy to present to you my friend, Rachel D'Alto. Rachel, welcome.
Hello, love. It really has been. It's got to be at least a decade. It's crazy.
It's insane. And I know, I think you and I met because I was on your podcast.
Yes.
Way back in the day. Like, Rachel's so cool. Everyone, that Rachel was doing a podcast before it was like a thing. Okay.
And then I quit before it became a thing. I was like, this is a lot of work. And now I see everybody doing it. I was like, I probably should do one, but I know how much work it is. That's why I stopped.
Girl, yes. You're always ahead of the curve. So for those of you who don't know Rachel D'Alto, you should. She is an amazing author. She's prolific. She's a relationship expert. She's a coach. She's a recovering attorney and mediator. I think you have like 10 degrees. I don't even know what they all are. She's been on TV. We've been on TV together. We both worked with Match.com. This is why I just love this human being, because she's as beautiful inside as she is on the outside. And today she is going to tell us about relatability. What is relatability and how we can all become better humans, make more friends, and be better on dates?
I'm ready.
Oh my God. Rach, tell us, what does it mean? The title of your book is Relatable. Tell us about what is relatability.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing. And obviously there's dictionary definitions and there's a lot of ways that we can define it. But for me, it came from, I was on Married at First Sight, I left, and I was getting all these messages from the audience members saying, you were the most relatable expert. And I thought, what the heck does that mean? You know, I get what it could mean, you know, by the dictionary, but what does that mean? What are they feeling? Why are they feeling connected to me? And that's really what it was. It was this, it was bigger than likeability. It was bigger than just likable. Because I think you can like a lot of people, right? We like a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I want to invest my energy into you. And that's where I felt like the differentiation came between likable and relatable. Was relatable is like, wow, I really want to connect to you. I want to be a part of your world. I want to invest my energy into you. And that's where I really start to differentiate the two.
And is relatability, I love how you're differentiating that. Is it, I feel like you're like me. Is that what it is kind of also?
Yeah. And it's, I can understand you. Like, okay. I get you, and I can dive into who you are. And you're not hiding who you are. So I can see you. So it's really, it doesn't have to be the same people. We could have people being very relatable who are very different. So it's not that you're seeing yourself in the other person necessarily as I see who this person is.
Okay, got it. So that's really, so the difference between likability, that's like a positive like person. You. Yeah, like, I oh like my them. Gosh, that person's just warm and friendly and da-da-da. Yeah. But relatable is, I feel a connection to you.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. And it's great to like people. Yeah. And you might think, oh, I like you. I don't know if I want to connect with you, but I like you. You're great. You're life of the party. But if you're relatable, I want to get to know you.
Yeah. There's a deeper connection there.
Wow. So relevant everywhere in life. Relevant in the aspects of life that I think we all crave more of, if we're being honest with ourselves. Who doesn't want richer friendships and maybe more friendships at the end of the day, better relationships with everybody around you, right? And maybe better dates as well. What do you have?
I think that this applies to all of those things. And it's so true in terms of friendship. You know, that's something, it's something that comes up oftentimes. I do TikTok, even though I am not 20 years old. But I started doing it and realized there was this whole audience on there that was craving content and information. And so I started doing these TikToks on friendship. And they would blow up. And the most heartbreaking responses were, I don't have any friends. I don't have any friends. I don't know how to make friends. All these adults were saying that they had no friends or they didn't have good friends. And it was just, it was such a wake up call to me that I realized there are so many adults out there. You know, it's very easy when you're a child, you're in school or you're at the recess or you're playing sports and whatnot. But then we get to this stage where we're working and maybe we have a family and maybe we have a partner, but we don't have friendships. And I can't imagine my life without my friendships, but I recognize that there's so many people out there that don't have that. And I do believe, you know, we blame a lot on social media. We blame a lot on society in terms of our loneliness. But I do think that the lack of friendship is a massive problem. There's 1 in 4 people in the United States have 0 friends. So I every time I think about that statistic, I get a little bit sad.
And so goosebumps.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking because it was 1 in 10, 20 years ago. So we're going in the wrong direction. And so relatability connection is connecting to friends, but yes, also as, you know, daters, we have to date better. You know, we all want this companionship, but we have to put ourselves out there in a different way so that we're actually seeing people and showing people who we are so that they can actually love you.
No, and that's so right. And I know in your book, Relatable, which is great, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, you cite the Harvard Grant study, which was the longest longitudinal study on what makes men happy. Of course, it started in 1938, so they only looked at men in the cohort, but pshaw. But the spoiler alert to that is that what made these men happiest over 75 years was the quality and the depth of their relationships with other people. And this was dudes, you guys. Okay. Now for women, we're like, yeah, right. But to hear from you that 1 in 4 humans in this country now, as opposed to 1 in 10, so 25% versus 10, say that they have no friends. Rachel, how do we make friends at any age? Like, tell us about this. That's so disturbing to me and sad. And I think it's something that gives so many people so much fear. We've all been ghosted by a friend, and it's almost as painful as having our hearts broken by a romantic other. But if there's, you know, for the listener that's listening to this and going, yeah, I used to have a lot of friends and maybe now I have 2, or I've never really had friends, or I would just like to make new friends. Tell us how we can do that.
Yeah. Well, first I have to say all it takes is one. So most of the research shows that as long as you have one good connection, you are protected from a lot of the things that can be very detrimental when you don't have friendship. So if you have just what is okay, we don't want to cling too tightly to them, but it's good to have at least one solid friendship. But I do believe that when we're looking at creating more friendships, we have to look internal and external. So there's internal and external activities. The easy part is the external, right? And we talk about this all the time. Go to the places where you enjoy doing things. You know, whether it's, if it's going to the gym, then do classes. Don't do, you know, don't sit on the treadmill with your AirPods in. Go to a class somewhere where you're actually talking to people who have a similar interest than you. It's very similar to finding dates in the wild.
I don't know who that person is on their treadmill that can run and talk to another human.
Oh my God.
And if that's you, I'm really jealous because I am huffing and puffing like a dog.
Yeah. I can't even go on the treadmill. So the fun story, I actually can't run in a straight line like on a treadmill. I physically can't do it. So
why does that not totally surprise me?
I'm like spast. It's so bad. So I fall off treadmills. So you're better than me that you're even on the treadmill. But anyway, so yes, if you are enjoying the gym, if you really enjoy, you know, learning a language or going back to school or cooking or whatever it is that has more than one person in that space, go do those things to try to meet those people. You can meet people online, but obviously we want those in real life connections are so much more important to our psyche and to our health. So we want to be able to have the online offline component. Sure. But you can start online. You can go to your, you know, local groups that have some sort of activities outside of Facebook, or I don't think Meetup. Is Meetup still a thing? Are people still on Meetup?
I think it's still a thing.
Okay. So if you're on Meetup, you know, there's so many different opportunities. And it really could be a simple approach to it where you're just setting the intention of wherever I go and whatever I'm doing in my life, I am open to meeting new people. So really setting that mindset. But then the internal side is so important too, of when you do meet those people, how are you presenting yourself? And that's really where relatable comes in. It's, you know, I try to bring it through this blueprint of connect, communicate, inspire, and really showing up. You know, the short version of this, where obviously we can't get into all of it, but connect is showing up as you. And that means like all the versions of you. You know, authenticity, I think, is this buzzword. But when people say like, just be yourself. And I'm like, I have 17 versions of who I am. You know, I have the person who's talking right now who isn't cursing. I have the person who, if you grab a beer with me, oh my gosh, the F-bombs that come out. You know, I have the buttoned up version. I have the laid back version. You're like, there's all different versions of ourselves, but whoever you bring to the table, make sure that those are versions of you that are real. And then going into communicate and inspire, there's different elements of just how you communicate, like communicate in a way that the people feel important, you know, and that's, I think, such a big part of when we meet someone new, whether it's a friend or a date, showing up in a way that I'm focused on making this a great experience for myself. Obviously, we want you to have a good time and I want you to be a part of the conversation, but how am I showing up to make other people feel like they're special? You know, how do I, because that's all people want. They just want to feel like they're important to you. And so often we meet people and then we railroad the conversation, kind of like I'm doing right now.
No, you're not. We want to hear all of it from you, my friend.
I have this internal clock where I'm like, Rachel, you've talked enough. Please stop talking.
That's because you're so relatable.
I just want, like, I want people to know that like there's entry points of conversation, but so often we see this on bad first dates. We see this on bad meetings with potential friends. They just get railroaded in this conversation and they don't feel like they mattered in it. So then why do they want to continue talking to this person? So it's the communicate obviously has a lot of different facets to it, but it really is about just being aware of how you show up in communication in a way that allows people to feel like they matter.
So tell me about this. And sometimes I feel like it's a dichotomy myself. Like, we're supposed to show up authentically, but then we're supposed to be positive. Like, help me reconcile this. Like, if I'm having a crappy shit day, for example, and I'm going to an event and there's all these versions of myself. Like you said, there's 17 versions of me. I can be the wine drinking F-bomb dropping person. I can look like the weather girl straight off of a segment. Like, we can all play all these different roles. How, like, is there something we should be doing consistently to better connect with people? And do we need to change our authenticity? Like, help us here, Rachel.
Well, I would say if you're having a bad day, like, your bad day is not your personality. So this isn't who you are. Showing up as authentic is showing up as your authentic personality and not necessarily your mood. So they're very different, personality and mood. So I would say, let's try to change the mood. You know, mood is mindset to me, and mood can be shifted. And if it can't be shifted, then maybe you don't go to that event. Maybe you postpone that first date until you feel better the next day. You know, I think people showing up as their best self, it means, you know, you're in the best possible mindset, but you're still showing up as you. And so that's where I think that dichotomy kind of merges, because you can still, and maybe you have to go to something. You can be like, you can be honest about it. And maybe it becomes part of the conversation of like, it's been a rough one. Like, how are you doing? Instead of lying and saying, oh my God, I'm great. Everything's great.
Right, right.
Because you feel that when people aren't being actually real in those conversations. It doesn't mean that we show up places. Again, it's like I want people to do things and push themselves outside of their comfort zone and maybe try to shift their mindset. But if it's really a bad day, I don't know. Sometimes it's better just take a minute. Yeah.
Take a breather, right? We've all had those days. Okay. So now let's change the scenario Bella put out. Like, and I love that differentiation that your personality is not your mood. A mood is transient. It's like the weather. It could be a stormy day. 5 minutes later, it could be sunny if you can take that weather system and change it. But your personality is who you authentically are. And who is that person? And that's who you want to bring. Maybe not the F-bomb dropping part of you. If it's, you know, kind of a nice networking event and you want to put your best foot forward. But, you know, if you're at a meetup group where everyone's like, come in and bring that version of yourself, then bring that version of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's a time and place, and that's where we have to allow for all those variations. And yeah, just remembering it. Mood is, so that in psychology, they call it state and trait. So state is, I'm going through a state. That would be my mood. Transient, comes and goes. Sometimes those moods last for a while. Sometimes, you know, they're instantaneous and get adjusted by a puppy. You know, and then there's also our traits, and some of our traits are immutable, and they're things that you really need to lean into. And that's part of it too, is I think above all else is really just identifying, you know, where am I uncomfortable with who I am? Where are my traits problematic for me? And when can I lean into them to really embrace who I am? You know, there's certain things that make you you, and that's okay. I have learned, and as my fiance has learned in the last couple months as we've renovated our house, I'm a control freak. And I am a perfectionist. The only area in my life that I'm actually a perfectionist is with design of my house. Like, I don't care. And I have taken complete control, and he's realized that this is who I am. And I'm like, this is who I am. I'm not going to pretend to like that. I'm not going to pretend to be easygoing in this case, because I am easygoing in every other situation. Not here.
Not that's here. Okay. Not now.
Not and now.
Did you just learn this about yourself, or this is something you knew?
Well, it's in, you know, every relationship is different. And it's the first time that I had somebody who actually cared about, you know, what was brought into the house. And I've always kind of just done it, and it didn't matter. And he cares, but we have agreed on stuff. And there's certain things that we've disagreed on. And, you know, we've come to like a stalemate, and it's like, okay, then we choose something else. But yeah, I didn't realize how intense I was about it. Like, I'm telling you, Bella, it goes from like 0 to 6 where I was like, no.
Like, I hate that. Like, how could you love that? I renovated, we gutted our house together after having been married for 20 years. I'll tell you what, if you can gut a house together and renovate together, you can probably stand the test of time.
Yeah, that's what we're literally like. We're in the final touches. Like, things are finally getting delivered and whatnot. And we're done next week. And I'm like, if we just did that, we good. We're good.
Oh my God. I love that. So, well, tell me if you could give us some, just, you know, let's say now we've got a good personality. We're in a good state, right? And we're just feeling a little anxious, and maybe, and one point I love in your book is when you are kind of, you have to dig in, like you just said, to figure out what parts of me do I not like? What am I afraid of? Am I afraid my friends are going to abandon me because it started in fifth grade and it would happen every 3 years? Like, someone would finally decide I'm annoying or whatever it is. It's like, and dig in and figure out what you're afraid of and then work to resolve that. Or how do you get over that? I know you talk about that in the book.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of things that come into play here. And social anxiety is an enormous challenge for so many. And it's another growing anxiety disorder in our world right now. And I wouldn't even classify it just to the United States. And so it's really understanding, like, there are people out there, and social anxiety is an actual diagnosable condition where you are so anxious to engage socially that you avoid it. And then when you do it, you actually sit there thinking about all the things you did wrong. That is like stereotypical. They come back and they're just like, I did this wrong. They must hate me. And it becomes this spiral of thoughts. So it's understanding that exists. And so if you have those feelings, those are things that you can absolutely become aware of and start to work through. But a lot of us just have regular old baggage. You know, we have all these things that we went through and these challenges that we've overcome or working to overcome. And, you know, the biggest thing that I've seen is that awareness component. Because a lot of times we avoid, you know, a lot of times we don't look at it. We feel that feeling, but we kind of push it down or we just ignore it. And we don't really recognize what's causing it. If we don't look at it and we don't recognize what's causing it, then we can't actually realize what's the underlying problem to heal it. And as I quoted Jay-Z in the book, you can't heal what you don't reveal.
Yeah.
And so we have to shine a light on it. And that's where it's really digging into those things. And you know, it's a challenge that we all go through. And even the people who feel like they have it all together, you know, I had massive abandonment issues, massive from my childhood. I tell a story, you know, in the beginning of the book where I had no friends. Mm-hmm. All my friends ditched me because I was kind of this overweight, nerdy girl, know-it-all, complete know-it-all. So apparently I had some, you know, issues back then.
Control issues.
Control issues back then. So, you know, thank God they've dissipated in a lot of areas except for the home decor. But I had like all of these things from child, like my little inner child was wounded. And so we have to look at that and we have to be willing to say, there are decisions I'm making now. There are responses I'm having now that are triggered by things that I don't even remember until I actually look at it. And so much healing can happen through that awareness. And sometimes it's just being aware. Like, oh, wow, that's why I'm doing that. And now I can start to shift it. And sometimes it actually takes a professional to sit down with and dig into and have those ahas and have those healings.
Okay, so I love that. Now, let's say young Rachel D'Alto is now a 35-year-old female. And it's like, oh my God, I so relate to this episode. And I was that nerdy, you know, overweight, know-it-all smart kid that was not athletic and really prided myself. I got my self-esteem from my knowledge, but it became a repellent for people. And now I'm 35. How do I make friends? Like, can you give me some tips on how I can do that? Now that I know what it is, I've done my dive. I'm like, ooh, that's where it came from. Now what?
Well, it's understanding like there's a reason you feel like that. There's a reason that you're approaching situations in this way. And honestly, sometimes it's just being aware that 35-year-old Rachel could say, holy crap, like that's how I'm showing up. Like I can start to change, because the thing is, when we start to look at things and we become aware of past conditions that are causing current problems, we are now able to shift our behaviors, and your brain will do this for you because you are aware of it. You are now going to pay attention to what's in front of you and pay attention to how you show up differently. And I liken this to, I tell this story often where, you know, I love Marshalls. I think Marshalls and TJ Maxx are like super fun. You never know. You walk in there, you think you need some shampoo, you walk out with like a couch and a fake tree and some t-shirts. But the problem is I also get massive anxiety when I go in there because everything is out of order, right? It's like, you know, all the shirts are mixed together. We got stuff over here. Everything's in all these different places. But if I go into a TJ Maxx or a Marshalls and I say, I'm looking for a blue shirt, all of a sudden, all I see are the blue shirts, because that's what I'm paying attention to and that's what I'm focusing on. And it allows me to you know, distract from all of the other elements and really focus on what's in front of me. And it's the same thing that our brain does. Same thing when we buy a car. You buy a new car, all of a sudden, hey, I never realized there was a million white Jeeps on the road. Guess what? There's not. There's the same number as there was yesterday. Your brain is just focusing on an intention. And that's why intentions are so powerful. So go into these situations now aware of how you talk, of how you connect, of how maybe you were clinging before. Maybe you were overdoing it. Maybe you were the opposite. Maybe where you're pushing people away. So all of a sudden, because you're aware that this is a possible tendency, your brain now shows it to you literally on a platter and says like, hey, human, like maybe we could do that a little differently.
I love that. And in addition to that, you talk a lot about the power of positivity. Tell us about this.
Yes. And this is very different than toxic positivity, which is a massive problem in this world where people are like, no, 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 everything happens for a reason. Everything's great. Like, no, 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 this is good.
And
no.
We do that to other people, right?
Oh my gosh. We do it to ourselves.
Toxic. We do it to ourselves. Like
we do it to everybody. Yeah. Oh,
it's having had a miscarriage. I remember when people would say back in the day, well, at least you're fertile or at least you already have a daughter. Right. And so you're like, that didn't feel good. I don't know what could feel good, but that didn't.
Does
I don't
not
want
help.
You to bright side me. I
Does
don't need
not help.
To bright side me.
Yes. Yes. And so when we talk about positivity, that's not the level or the direction that we're talking about. But in general, positivity actually is shown to have health benefits. It's good for your heart. It's good for your mind. It's good for your happiness in terms of how you connect with people. And so when I talk about positivity, let's start to get ourselves into a place where we are able to have hope and we are able to be happier. Because that is actually going to help you show up. One, because positive people have a bigger, a more positive impression of who they are and of their lives. So that allows them to show up more authentically and naturally themselves because they're okay with themselves. So a lot of the things that I talk about with positivity is really assessing kind of where you're at. And then how can we shift you to get better positive thinking, better positive environments? You know, that's a huge thing too, where we are a combination of the people that we spend time with. People often quote you're the combination of the five people that you spend the most time with.
Totally.
Which is kind of BS and kind of true. So that quote was actually from like a motivational speaker who had the right idea, but we've never studied the five people that we surround ourselves with, but we have studied MRIs of two people who spend significant amount of time together and their brain waves started to match, which is really freaky, right? let's just be aware of there's a lot of ways that we could change who we are based on our environment, based on the way we think, based on the way that, we process, based on what we're aware of.
Wow. And for those of you can't see me right now, but I've just opened up Rachel's book. And on page 54, I love this so much. There's something that she put in the book called the positivity scale, right? We all might think that we're positive. Okay. But really, how positive are we? And it comes by doing a deep dive. And do you mind if I read these literally out loud? Because I love this. Okay. Now, what you're supposed to do, and if you're interested in this, I'll, send me an email. I'll send you Rachel's book, whatever it is. But listen to these. It says, take a look at these questions and jot down your answer, which can range from 1 to 5. 1 is I strongly disagree, and 5 is I strongly agree. Okay. I have great faith in the future. Assess yourself. I am satisfied with my life. Assess yourself. Others are generally here for me when I need them. Oof, that's a biggie. Assess. I look forward to the future with hope and enthusiasm. Do you really? On the whole, I am satisfied with myself. Gave me goosebumps. I feel I have many things to be proud of, and I generally feel confident in myself. And it says, for each response, the closer you are to a 5, the more positive you are in that area. 5s across the board, great. You're friggin' rainbows and freaking unicorns. Good on you. If you're not, you're going to have to implement the next couple steps that Rachel outlines in her book. Assess your environment. And what's your next step?
After assess,
create awareness and spin. Yes. So I love the fact that instead of saying just be positive, here's an assessment to tell you really honestly how positive are you across these things. And what that will help you to do, guys, is figure out where you might be more negative and projecting that negativity, which again, isn't what any of us want to do. So after you do that assessment, what do we do? How do we get more positive in these areas? And it's a positive to Rachel's point about feeling better and happier with yourself And most importantly, being more attractive to others, to friends and significant others, and dates and dates.
Yeah, all of that. It changes everything. So yeah, I love the positivity scale because it's a psychological based, you know, they've used this in so much research and so many different studies. So it's a something that is legitimized, but it also shows you why have people do this first is really assess that scale and then do these activities and then show me how you changed. Show me how everything has started to shift because I love some ROI. But yeah, after they do the scale, it's really about figuring out what is working within your environment? Who, you know, how are you working within your environment and what's working within yourself and what's not working? So I go on to have them really take a look at the people around them, the environments that they put themselves in. You know, there's so many areas of our life that we can start to shift because even your home, we were talking about home decor before. If you're in a place where, you know, there's no light or, you know, you don't like what your space looks like. And obviously, you know, this is coming from a space of you, everybody has certain levels of means and, you know, not everybody can move, but we could add a little bit of something to change even just the physical environment that we're in, but also the emotional environment that we're in. Who are we allowing in? You know, who is in that space? Who is affecting your brain MRI? And how can we start to really assess those relationships and make sure that they're all serving us? And then after that, I talk about the negativity journal, which is something where we become hyper, hyper aware of the negative thoughts that we have. And I know people is another BS thing that people quote. They're like, there's 60,000 thoughts a day. There's 80,000. I don't know. There's obviously a lot of thoughts, period. I don't know. Like, do you hear that all the time? Like one person's like, there are thoughts. Like anytime that someone says something with conviction like that, I was like, you have no idea, but there's a lot of thoughts and a lot of them are negative. And so the more that we become aware of them, the more that we track them, the more that we can start to spin them to become a more positive person without becoming a toxically positive person. You can still have bad days. You can have, you know, times where you can't see the bright side and that's okay. You know, but it's really about what are the things that are changeable? What is malleable? And then work on that. And then things start to really shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And the negativity journal, and Rachel alluded to that, what that is, and feel free to jump in here. It's documenting, guys. Like if you feel like, take that little positivity assessment, okay? And if you're like, woof, I'm ones across the board, and that's okay. I love self-awareness, right? Because then the next step is, how do we change that? Write down in a journal. We talk all the time about gratitude journals, writing down the things that we're grateful for. And that's amazing. And I love that. And now what we also want you to do is catch yourself where you're super negative. Every negative thought that you have about yourself, your environment, or another person, write it down. And then what do we do once we write it down?
Once you write it down, you have to find the counter thought and write that down, because every thought that you have has a counter thought. So it could be, and you know, the typical for women is, I hate my body, or I don't like the way this looks, or I don't like myself, or I'm not worthy of love. These are, I mean, actually that becomes more universal, but all of those can then shift to the positive version of it. And sometimes you can't get from I hate my body to I love my body. Maybe it's I hate my body to I accept my body and I appreciate my body for what it does for me. So there's a lot of middle ground, because I think the problem is when people say, oh, just think a different thought. Again, it's like the toxic positivity we were talking about earlier. It's not possible. You know, our brain can't make the leap. If we're so far down the negativity train that this is where we're at in that hate zone, we can't get to love. You know, it's too far away. So find that middle ground and write that down and allow that to become part of your mantra. Because the more, again, I feel like a broken record sometimes with how much I talk about awareness, but it really is. Awareness is everything. Once you start recognizing, oh my gosh, wow, I thought that, and that, like that's horrible. Let's stop thinking like that. Let's catch those thoughts and then create that spin.
So here's a scenario that comes up for me at Smart Dating Academy with my clients. Let's say, you know, I've had people come in telling me, okay, I'm a 4-date wonder. I'm great until the fourth date, but then the bottom falls out for me. Like, I can't get a fifth date. Now, that's a negative thought right there. How would you help that person to spin that thought to something positive? Like, nobody wants to date me past four dates.
The right person is going to want to date me on date five.
I love that.
Yeah. And then I want to find out what the hell's happening on those 4 days.
Right. Enter dating coach. Like, wait, yeah. Like, what's going on? And what's going on?
That's a very specific number of dates.
I've had everything, as I'm sure you have, happened in 13 years. I don't know. Well, every time I say, man, I've heard it all, I've seen it all, something new whacks me in the face on my desk that day. Like, wait, what? I've never heard that before. So, you know, I think positivity, authenticity, these are all ways of becoming more relatable. What are some key things that you would tell us that you might not have shared yet about how we can be more relatable?
You know, I think that second section, that communication part, and inspiration is a whole other story, and obviously an important part of it. But the communication part is such an important element of how we show up right now, because, you know, part of what I say in the book is how communication is energetic. I know we can think of the right things to say. You and I have both seen, you know, people who tell, you know, just write this or just say this on a date or like have these lines. And they don't work. You know, maybe it's a filler space, but you can't just memorize what to say. It's how you say it. It's how you show up. And part of where I think a lot of disconnects happen is we don't show up in a way, and we started talking about this earlier, is that makes people feel important. And we don't show up in a way that makes them feel our presence and lets them feel who we are and feel that we are invested in this person, because instead we're distracted by everything else around us. And that's a challenge that I've seen over and over again, where, you know, I see cell phones out. I see people, you know, together but apart because they're just sitting there texting. And it's really, I sound like a get off my lawn. Like, I've gotten to that age of like, cell phones, what are they doing with this technology? But it's so true, because it's such an amazing part of our lives, but it's also such an interference in our connections. And so how often are we really, really paying attention to each other? How often are we really committed to, I am here and I am present and I'm not letting my mind wander, and I'm definitely not letting my thumbs wander to this beautiful contraption.
Yeah. And that's hard, and it requires if you start out a conversation, like you're saying, Rachel, with my goal is to make the other person feel important right now, and that's your singular goal, that automatically kind of puts your brain in check, ideally, if you're truly invested in that goal, and knowing that that is a really, really, really important goal here. We're talking about, you know, succeeding on dates, being more relatable, hell, let's throw in being more likable, even if you're looking to make more friends, it sounds like making the person across from you feel important should be your number one goal. Is that right?
Absolutely. It should be I think that there's a couple goals up there, like showing up as yourself is a huge part of it, but that really is such an enormous element of it is really just being attuned to the person in front of you and caring enough to put the effort in, because we don't. And I get it too. I know you've heard this from daters, but people get burnt out, they're tired, they're kind of like, they show up and they're like, here's another one. Let me just sit here and pray that it's, you know, not as terrible as the last one. So they're not there. They're not invested. The energy is not there. And it shifts everything. It shifts the way you show up. It shifts everything you say. And so if anything, I want people to really identify how can they be more present and how can they set that intention to show up in a way that the people feel like they are important.
Right. And being positive at the same time.
Yeah.
kind of.
I say, listen,
right?
Take snippets. Like you don't have to, because I think it becomes overwhelming. You talk to someone who is, you know, maybe in a funky state, has had a rough time of it, you know, not meeting a lot of friends, not having great dates. So I don't want them to think that they have to do everything at once, because then it becomes, it just, you end up doing nothing. It's that paralysis that comes with so many other things that you could focus on. So I think, you know, just focus on one thing at a time and then stack it. And eventually you'll get it all together.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the dating world, Rach, how would you recommend, we want to be authentic, right? We want to be ourselves, but then we have to walk that tightrope of oversharing as well. Right. And this is, and I know this is always the struggle in your work, in my work. It's like, okay, you know, my ex cheated on me and therefore I'm back into the dating swamp land again, or what? And when we say be authentic and be positive, you know, I tell my clients, have a good thing to say about your divorce, even though it was sucky, because people need to earn that part of your story, right? And that vulnerability without boundaries is just plain oversharing. So I welcome Amen. Your thoughts on here.
I completely agree. I say the same thing, is that not everybody deserves your story. Not everybody deserves all of your story. And it comes with intimacy. And we're talking about emotional intimacy. And that does not happen in the first couple of dates. You have to get to that place. And eventually, yeah, you're going to share it all. You know, there's going to come a time in the right relationship where they know everything about you, or whatever, you know, within reason. Sometimes you don't need to ever know everything about, but it's just really tempering that of recognizing that there is a, you're stepping into the pool, you're not diving in. And so share for the connection. If people ask you a question, don't lie. You know, if they ask you specifically, like, did you get cheated on? We're not saying like lie about it, but it doesn't need to be that front and center. You could have had the worst divorce in the world, but it doesn't need to be front and center. So it's really, I think, that tempering and recognizing that I do have, and I can still show up as authentically me without just verbal diarrhea, because that is not attractive to anybody.
Absolutely. And, you know, corollary to that, there are questions that people might ask you on a date that are inappropriate, and you don't need to answer those questions. If somebody asks you on date one, well, did you get cheated on? You can say, you know, in every relationship, there are complications and there's accountability on both sides. So that's what I'll tell you about it. So you can answer things in a way that's also comfortable for you, right? Because you may
boundaries.
Not. Boundaries
yes.
are fine. And you don't have to say no comment or I'm not going to answer that, right? Because that's sort of like disconnecting any connection.
Yeah. And maybe if they're asking really inappropriate questions, you want to disconnect and find a new date.
Right. You're like, oh my God, my cake is burning. I got to go. My cat just jumped down to a power line. I can't believe it. I'm so sorry. This has been amazing. Got to split.
I'll call you. Don't call me.
Oh my gosh. And, you know, this is one question that I really wanted to ask you. How do you... If someone feels like, and you mentioned social anxiety and how many of us have social anxiety at this point, but if we feel like, you know, I'm just kind of socially awkward, like how can someone overcome that? And if so, how?
Yes. And so one, you know, sometimes the social awkwardness comes from a personality trait. And so those are not always, you know, mutable. So sometimes, but you could be awkward and awesome. So to one, I would just say is like, let's just embrace some of the awkward. But in terms of social anxiety, in terms of, you know, the fears around things, some of the best research has shown that doing the thing, you know, and it doesn't have to be this, again, we're not diving in, just like our stories. We don't have to dive into the deep end. We can baby step into the pool and we can start to do the things that scare us. And the best thing that we can do in terms of our fear is doing it in ways that now prove our brain wrong, you know, because basically it's our brain on fear is saying, don't do that because you're going to get hurt. You're going to die. You're going to get, you know, you're going to feel pain, whether it's emotional or physical. Pay attention to some of the physical pain stuff. we want to feel these fears in certain ways because it does protect us. But when it comes to social things, allow yourself to feel those elements and recognize that it wasn't so bad, because our brains then do allow us to recognize that that didn't happen. The worst case scenarios didn't exist. And now I can do a little bit more. So push yourself to make that first, you know, phone call or send the text message. Push yourself to get online. Push yourself to start a conversation at, you know, the coffee shop. But then allow that to simmer and then push that next step.
And I love that. And pushing yourself, right? This is how people get over phobias. It's exposure therapy, right? If you're afraid of a plane, we're going to watch the video of a plane taking off. And then we're going to finally build up to actually getting on the plane. And so what I want you guys to think about is, if you feel that awkwardness or that fear, is do the thing. And I will not grade you for a response. If you say, oh my gosh, I'm a female and I'm terrified because I'm old school about sending a guy a message first online, because if he doesn't respond, that means I am, you know, destined to be alone forever. No, I want you to send out messages. I want you to send out 3 messages today without caring if that person ever responds to you. And all I want you to do is be proud of yourself for having done it. That's it. And know that if they don't respond, oh my God, wait, hold on. I'm still alive. I didn't die. I didn't vaporize. An alien ship didn't come and suck me up, because what I feared, it's like, okay, it's fine. I did it. I was just supposed to do the task. We're not grading you on the response. So get yourself to the place. And if you feel socially awkward, go out, say hi to someone. Right? You can say, hi there, my name's Bella. I'm a recovering, you know, socially awkward person, and I'm here post-COVID. I am so glad to be here. And if somebody said that to me, I'd probably laugh and want to talk to them.
Same here. I love all of that. Absolutely perfect.
Rachel, you are the best. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and sharing your precious time. I know how incredibly busy you are, and you're amazing. And I am going to work on my own relatability today.
I think you're pretty good. It's always good to see you, and I'm so happy to be here. So thank you.
We will definitely have you back. Thank you. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.